this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are searching for truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or on the internet at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Welcome to The Next Step. Hey, this is Father Vazquez, welcoming you back to The Next Step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life, inspecting the very fabric of our being, and doing it all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes Mission, the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center, and of course is brought to you by the good folks at the Apostles Net, Apostolic Evangelism for an expanding and electronic universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Can you tell we're having fun over here? Well, I hope you can, and we always do. These podcasts are here for you, and we just have a great time putting it together. But I gotta tell you, this week has been a very challenging week. Since we left you last week with our podcast, and we were telling you, okay, let's get ready for the third week of Lent, all of a sudden, life changed in very big dimensions. Because, of course, those of you who have been following our podcast from day one know that an area of the world, particularly called Darfur, particularly plays a very important role in this mission, in this ministry, and unfortunately, life changed once again. Of course, we're talking about the latest developments about the indictment of al-Bashir, and because of that indictment, he threw out 16 different humanitarian organizations from Darfur, and of course there's a new refugee problem that is just escalating as we speak, as we put together this podcast. And so In His Shoes, along with Stop Genocide Now, with Hope, we got together, Jewish World Watch, and we got together and put together a great rally, which not only brought together people, but brought attention to this very sick problem that's taking place in the world. And we're going to be talking about that today in this podcast. There are many dimensions to it. In fact, Harach from London, his global perspective, will be addressing some of the key ingredients to the genocide taking place in Darfur. And I've got to tell you, it's an important episode of the global perspective, because a lot of times people come up to me, particularly Armenians, and say, well, what is it? You know, in the Armenian genocide, it was very obvious who the perpetrator was. In other words, it was another ethnic group, another nationality. It was the Turkish government against the Armenian people. In Rwanda, it wasn't so clear. You had the Hutus and the Tutsis, both Rwandan. In Nazi Germany, you had the Nazis against the Jews and most of the Allied forces, of course. But in this situation, it's not too clear, because we talk about Darfur, we talk about Sudan. Where are these places in Africa? We talk about ethnicity. We talk about religion. This is a predominantly Muslim area. What are we talking about? Who's killing who? So you want to stay tuned for the global perspective, which will put it all into perspective. And then, of course, we have some bubbles, which are going to bring us back to what this time of year is. And I tied this in very importantly, because if you are following the Lenten journey, you know that this is a very special time of year. But being so special, it has to push us. It has to push us to the limits to really do the action that God is calling us to do. It doesn't count if we're just there and fasting and staying away from certain foods. It doesn't count if we're just retreating and praying. The third element of it is action. God calls us to action. And certainly this week, with the situation in Darfur, we were called to action. And I have to tell you, I am proud of our ministry to being able to meet those challenges, but it doesn't stop here. So today's podcast is jam-packed. You want to stay tuned. Just kick back and relax for the next few minutes. We're going to be together. We're going to be looking at some intense things all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. And as you know, we're talking about not about a religion, not about a group of people, not about a building. We're talking about a faith that precedes everything. We're talking about something that was there from the beginning of time. It's a faith that connects us to the eternal, which we call love. I thought we'd start off today's podcast with the Sperani Choir. This is a group of girls. It's a young girls' choir singing an Armenian hymn. And I thought it appropriate because, you know, it was girls that really got us involved with the Darfur situation, the plight of young girls. And I know I've mentioned this many times in previous podcasts, but very important that we remember this story, that in villages in Darfur, the big dilemma that parents have, that particularly mothers have, is who will they send out to go get water or wood to make the fires. And you're not talking about just going around to the back shed. You're talking about walking 1, 2, 3, 4 miles away to get 5 gallons of water or to get some wood. And parents, mothers have to make that decision. Who do you send out? Well, you don't send out father because he will definitely get killed. You don't send out your sons because they will get killed. They're young men. So you send out your daughters. And the reason behind it, as they say, because the worst that will happen to them is they will be raped. Can you imagine a mother having to make that decision and coming up with the solution that the worst that can happen is that she will be raped? And this is a dilemma, this is a decision that every single day in those villages, in those camps, Darfuri women have to make. And young girls, just like the ones we just heard a couple minutes ago, with beautiful voices, who have their life in front of them, are cut down, are torn down. Their lives are destroyed from that moment on, as they are raped, mutilated, and in many cases killed, because they are the casualties of what we call today genocide. Genocide, I gotta tell you, for me, was a word that I thought was reserved for my people. I'm an Armenian, my parents, my grandparents, we've talked about it all our lives, genocide. I never realized that genocide was more than an Armenian experience until, as you go on through life, you start hearing about stories, about casualties here and there. And they talk about the Nazi Holocaust. Well, a genocide. A group of people deciding that another group of people don't have the right to live. We heard about it in Cambodia. We heard about it in Bosnia. Just a few years ago, I had the opportunity to go to Rwanda. And for me, that was an incredible opportunity because as a grandchild, as somebody who really lives in the moment with genocide, hearing the stories of the Armenian genocide. I had one foot in the first genocide of the 20th century, and being in Rwanda, I had the other foot in the last century, the last genocide of the 20th century. And I've got to tell you, standing between those two genocides, you quickly understand that there's no such thing as evolution. The human species has not evolved in the manner in which it could perpetrate evil. It could provoke the most essential and gut-level feelings in a person to be able to go out and kill others. And time again, we saw the same stories taking place in Armenia, in Nazi Germany, in Cambodia, in Bosnia, in Rwanda. And today, we're seeing those same stories taking place in Darfur. It is the modern genocide, but unlike other genocides, which today have periods on them, in other words, they are finished, Darfur is happening right now. It's a comma. And so, if we could do something about it, it doesn't have to end as tragically as the other genocides ended. But unfortunately, time is against us, and we're seeing day in and day out. In fact, what provoked us to do this last rally over the weekend was an article that appeared on Nicholas Kristof's blog. And Nicholas Kristof is a columnist on the New York Times. And, you know, check out his blog at newyorktimes.com. But what's interesting is he was the one who really broke the story on Darfur a few years ago and really grabbed the attention of the world. And he said that right now, within a period of less than 2 weeks, 1.2 million people will need water. Within a period of less than 2 weeks, 1.5 million people will be without access to health services. And within a period of less than 2 weeks, 760,000 people will not have shelter at the beginning of the rainy season. But what I have to share with you today, first of all, is that it's not as bleak as it can be. And I want to say this because if you live with hope, you've got to believe that there are better times coming. And I know, I'm guaranteed of that. Because of my faith, and I'm guaranteed from what I saw this weekend. And what I saw is people coming together. So we could talk about people have not evolved as far as the evil that they've done, but I think that we've come a long way as far as saying, I'm willing to put away my comforts and do something for other people. And that's the power of love being manifested. Two incredible individuals, one of them, Gabriel Starring. You've heard us talk about him in the past, Man of the Year for In His Shoes Ministry last year. And of course, Katie J. These two people were there through the last 4 or 5 days inside of the tent while manning the tent and sending out so much information. And I'm telling you right now, go to stopgenocidenow.org and you could see blogs, you could see films and videos. And in fact, in a couple days, they'll be heading out to Chad so you could follow all the things that they're doing. But also greater than that was the group of people that assembled there. From In His Shoes Ministries, we had people throughout the last 4 or 5 days right on federal property and saying that, yes, this is something that we at In His Shoes have always talked about, that it's not enough honoring a genocide in the past, but it's important that we take a step today to say that we put our foot in the shoes of other people. We feel the pain of the Darfuris. And sure enough, right there were Darfuris coming out of the woodworks, it seemed like, but where there was about 20 of them that drove in from Phoenix. And together we chanted and we let the world know that it will not go unchecked, that we will stand vigilant against people who perpetrate these kinds of crimes against other people, against humanity. Stop Genocide Now, In His Shoes Ministries, Hope, Jewish World Watch, all kinds of people, all kinds of organization from all different walks of life, a group of nuns that showed up, everyone there saying one incredible message, a message of hope, a message of triumph, of love, over evil. Well, before going any further, let me help out some of you who might be having a difficult time at this point. Like, what are we talking about? Are we talking about politics? Are we talking about governments and weapons? And why are you bringing this into a religious podcast, a religious discussion where we should be talking about issues of faith? And as you know, from the very beginning, we've always talked about Armenian Orthodoxy, not in terms of something ancient and something we read or something that belongs in a museum, but something which guides us, allows us to create our tomorrows, as it has for the Armenian people. I mean, here's a group of people that really there's no other way that they've survived. They've never had the political power. They've never had the weaponry, the military strategists. But they've had this essential element, which is love. The gospel of hope, the gospel of resurrection. And that love is something that I'm challenging you to look into and realize that that love is more powerful than all the evil that's out there. Whether it's in your life, whether it's in your family, or in this case, whether it's existing in the world. I am convinced that the power of love and the one enduring message that has to come to us from Christianity is that the power of love will always beat out all of the power of evil, of hatred. And so I'm challenging you today to look at this story coming out of Darfur as a story that is a moral imperative for you and me. Because, you know, the basic question, I know many people used to walk around just a few years ago with those WWJD bracelets and lockets. What would Jesus do? And you think that, well, it's kind of elementary, it's kind of cliche. But in this case, can you find Jesus anywhere else but right there? Yesterday, as soon as I spoke at the rally, a couple of African-American women came up to me. They were with a group called The Lynx. And they said, well, which church are you from? And I said, well, I happen to be a priest of the Armenian church. And they were kind of surprised that a church would be there. And as I was talking to them, another gentleman approached and got involved in the discussion. And he said something which I thought was very well said, very simply said, but well said. Well, where else should a church be? And that's a question that we need to ask ourselves. Where else should a Christian be at this time? Sitting around and doing Lenten practices? Or should you be out there taking those Lenten practices and applying them to the real world? There's a genocide taking place. To me, it's even more. Because as an Armenian, I need to be able to answer the calling of what happened to my people in our genocide. And in fact, it was that little break that I sometimes believe, I always believe that these coincidences that we call coincidences are really somehow a little bit more than that. And yesterday, sure enough, LA Times, front page of LA Times, as I was preparing to speak at this rally, the front page had an article about Darfur. And the lead article, the lead paragraph was about a 2-year-old child who was being killed. And it reminded me because my grandmother had a story of a 2-year-old, well, I guess that would be my uncle, my father's brother, her 2-year-old child, which she had to, in the desert, basically dig a ditch and place him in there to bury his body. And as I read that story yesterday, the memory of my grandmother came to me, and I thought to myself, you know, what prayer, what possible prayer could she have had? Because here was a woman of great faith. Later on, I got to know her as a woman of great faith. What possible prayer could she have said at that point? And I'm sure it's the same prayer that the Jewish women said in Germany. I'm sure it's the same prayer that was said in Ethiopia, in Cambodia, in Rwanda, and today in Darfur. It's the prayer of knowing that it doesn't end here. And I think that was the prayer that really I wanted to say yesterday at that rally. That it doesn't end in Darfur. Because, you know, in Darfur, you have El-Bashir. We're going to hear in a few minutes how El-Bashir plays into this. In Armenian genocide, we had Talat Pasha. In Germany, you had an Adolf Hitler. These were the visible enemies, but the bigger enemy, the invisible enemy, is our indifference. You know, the late, great Dr. Martin Luther King said it so beautifully. He said, "He who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as he who helps to perpetuate it. He who accepts evil without protesting against it is really cooperating with it." That's very profound. In other words, we cannot, we must not, and we will not accept evil. And the first condition to that is for us to open our mouths. The first condition to that is for us to protest against it. And it's happening today in Darfur. In your lives, it's happening in the relationships that you have. In our communities, it's happening within the different interactions that we have with different aspects of the community. We have to stop evil, and it starts with us. It starts with us fulfilling very basic dreams. Dreams of the possibility that good wins out. I mean, check out even in our lives. We used Dr. Martin Luther King just a minute ago. Think about what happened just 60 days ago in the United States of America. We elected and inaugurated a president, not because of the color of his skin, but because of the content of his character. When Barack Obama was elected, inaugurated, a dream came true. Dr. Martin Luther King had dreamt that 40 years ago that people would not be judged by the color of their skin. And so, because of the content of his character, Barack Obama became the president. And so, too, let us dream today that we can end hatred. We can bring peace. Let us dream that genocide will end. And if we can stop the genocide, trust me, everything else in our lives will be so much more easier for us to handle, because the ultimate victory is our victory, the victory of love over hatred, good over evil. And that, to me, is the ultimate Christian message, isn't it? Think about Good Friday. On Good Friday, all the bets were down. It'd be impossible that this turned out to be a winning game. Jesus was dead. But just 3 days later, when you look at Good Friday from the empty tomb, you realize that dreams do come true. That the dream is there. It's up to us to dream it and believe in it. Well, to give us a little bit context to our discussion today, here's Haraj Chilingirian from London. And as I mentioned earlier, he's going to be talking about Darfur, giving us some of the history, some of his insights, his analysis, and really a direction of where we're going. So here he is from London with the global perspective.
This is Haraj in London, and welcome to this week's Global Perspective. On March 4th, the International Criminal Court issued a warrant for arrest for President Omar al-Bashir of Sudan for crimes against humanity and war crimes committed in Darfur. Bashir is charged with 10 charges of war crimes, 3 counts of genocide, 5 of crimes against humanity, and 2 of murder. This is the first time that the International Court is taking a crucial step towards challenging the impunity of a sitting head of state for crimes committed against own population. The decision came at a crucial time when the situation in Darfur was getting worse and might actually be worse as we speak. Predictably, General Omar Bashir, who has been in power since June 1989, denied any involvement in the genocide. A few days ago, amid rising tensions with the international community, Bashir declared that international aid agencies and NGOs will no longer be welcome in Sudan, and that in a year's time, Sudan will no longer need any international NGOs in war-ravaged Darfur. For the millions of Darfuri victims in Sudan, this landmark decision provides independent legal recognition of the massive crimes committed against them and confirms that there are reasonable grounds to believe that Bashir is personally criminally responsible, as stated by the International Crisis Group in a recent report. The Brussels-based Crisis Group report continued that for the Sudanese government, the implications of Bashir's indictment are complex and critical. It will force the ruling majority, the National Congress Party, to recognize that the international efforts to persecute those responsible for atrocities in Darfur cannot be readily evaded. Still, Bashir and his security apparatus are entrenched in their positions and continue to claim that the ICC is a tool of those seeking regime change in Sudan. Sudan is Africa's biggest country, geographically and politically divided between Muslims, about 70% on the one hand, and Christians, about 25%, and members of traditional African religions on the other. This vast country has seen conflicts virtually since its independence in 1956, most intensely between North and South from 1956 to 1972, and 1983 to 2005. The North-South division of the country had been devised by the British in 1947, long before independence, which had handed political power to elites in the North. The Southerners have felt marginalized by the leaders in the North and have continually attempted to seize power. As the International Crisis Group reports, systematic violations of agreements by the government, combined with increasing Islamic shift in the late 1970s, and the discovery of oil in the south, eventually led to resumption of war and deployment of northern troops to oil-rich town of Bentiu. Southern troops mutinied against the government in early 1983. General Nemiri abrogated an agreement signed in Addis Ababa in June 1983, dissolving South's constitutional guarantees and declaring Arabic as official language. Islamic Sharia law replaced the Sudanese law in September 1983. Gradually, Southern grievances crystallized around the Sudan People's Liberation Army movement, and in 1985, a popular uprising overthrew Nemiri and soon after Sadiq al-Mahdi's democratic government under the Umma Party was elected in 1986. Within 3 years, a bloodless coup in June 1989 brought the National Islamic Front, or NIF, to power, a day before a bill freezing Sharia law due to be passed. Led by General Omar al-Bashir, the current president, the National Islamic Front unraveled steps towards peace, revoked the constitution, banned opposition parties, moved to Islamize the judicial system, stepped up the North-South war, and proclaimed jihad against the non-Muslim South. Yet another new chapter in Sudan's civil wars opened when a revolt broke out in Darfur in February 2003 by the Sudan Liberation Army Movement and Justice and Equality Movement rebels. President Bashir's Arab-dominated regime faced a grave threat from these black African rebels. As reported by The Telegraph in the UK, he could not trust his regular army to suppress this challenge, because most of its rank and file were recruited in Darfur and hailed from the same tribes as the insurgents. So he relied on the notorious Janjaweed militias. These mountain gunmen, drawn from Khartoum's traditional allies among Darfur's Arab tribes, were given carte blanche to pillage the regime's enemies. The Janjaweed have committed wide-scale murders and rapes, and the government has not only failed to rein in on the terror, but has encouraged it for political purposes. After a series of military victories, the government-supported Arab Janjaweed militia began ethnically cleansing African tribes. Despite the 2004 deployment of the African Union mission in Sudan, attacks on civilians continued. Insecurity compounded by inter-rebel fighting and proxy war between Sudan and neighboring Chad, eventually destabilizing Central African Republic. In March 2005, the UN Security Council referred Darfur to the International Criminal Court, or the ICC. 2 years later, ICC issued arrest warrants for Government Minister Ahmed Haroun and Janjaweed Commander Ali Kushayeb. The government in Khartoum, of course, has refused to hand them over so far. When the May 2006 Darfur peace agreement failed, attacks on civilians and aid workers increased dramatically. Groups splintered, confrontations complicated by inter-Arab tension, and broad land grab by all parties. Retaliatory attacks accelerated and intensified from early 2008, when the government launched major aerial and ground attacks in West and North Darfur. Faced with increasing international sanctions, Khartoum finally accepted African Union and United Nations hybrid force for Darfur in June 2007, but the UN forces replaced the African Union forces in January 2008. The conflict in Darfur has many causes and dimensions, including decades of struggle for resources, ethnic tensions, years of drought, overpopulation, displacement, and starvation. According to the United Nations, more than 200,000 people have been killed, more than 2.5 million driven from their homes to live in camps, and more than 4 million have been directly affected by the conflict. Despite the Sudanese government's suppression of information, killing of eyewitnesses and journalists, and obstruction of international investigation of mass graves, the genocide in Darfur has attracted international attention, but unfortunately, not enough action towards prevention and protection. As experts observe, the miscalculations of Western governments over the last few years have actually strengthened President Bashir. Instead of placing pressure on Khartoum, they chose to sponsor a wholly ineffective African Union force of 5,000 troops and 2,000 civilians to Darfur, which made no impact. The West also backed an endless round of peace talks between Khartoum and Darfur's rebels in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, but again, to no real effect. While the international arrest warrant is a step towards the right direction, Bashir's defiance and refusal to take responsibility for atrocities could mean more troubling times for Darfur and Sudan in general. The voice of the international community is crucial at this point in time in keeping the pressure on the Sudanese government to halt the violence and the conflict and to make sure that the people of Darfur are protected from further harm. The genocide in Darfur was and is preventable. Unless the resolve never again becomes a forceful action rather than mere words or political statements, we will see yet more scenes of atrocities right before the eyes of humanity. What Darfur needs immediately is protection from violence committed by their own government and end to violence. The entire international community must stand up and emphatically declare in word and action, never again to another genocide. And on that note, I leave you to ponder on your next step for Darfur. And until next week, this is Hraç Çilingiryan with the Global Perspective.
Hraç Çilingiryan always doing a wonderful job of giving us a broader perspective today about Darfur and putting a lot of the elements into perspective, allowing us to see some of the history and where we do need to go. I think once you hear the history, it becomes obvious that, you know, hatred and evil are there from the beginning. There's nothing new under the sun, as it's been said. And so it is. It's not an Al Bashir, it's not an Adolf Hitler, it's not a Talat Pasha today that we're fighting. It's basically humanity's inability to rise to the occasion, to rise from our humanity. Because it is the same evil. It's a continuation, a thread that begins in the 20th century with the Armenian Genocide, and a thread that is woven through Nazi Germany, through Cambodia, through Ethiopia, with the likes of the Hitlers and the Idi Amins. And it goes through Bosnia and Rwanda, and today ends up in Darfur. But different from all other genocides, we have an ability to stop this right now. And the challenge is up to us. We talked earlier about the prayer. I mentioned about the prayer. What possible prayer could my grandmother had when she buried her two-year-old child? It was the prayer of hope. And I believe it's the prayer that has been prayed throughout the centuries, whenever people have found that difficulty. It is the prayer that stands in front of us when we look at the empty tomb, the prayer to believe in a tomorrow, that despite all of our difficulties, there is a brighter tomorrow. Helping us pray, Nerses Şnorhali, the grace-filled, has always pointed us in the direction of the eternal. And the prayer, I confess with faith, Havadov Chostovanim, is the prayer that we've been following with this series of spiritual bubbles. Here is Ani to present us four more verses, and very important verses, as you'll soon find out why.
Today's spiritual bubble is from the prayers of Saint Nerses, the grace-filled. Heavenly King, grant me your kingdom, which you have promised to your beloved. Strengthen my heart to hate sin and to love you alone and to do your will. Protector of your creatures, by the sign of your cross, keep my soul and body from the allurements of sin, from the temptations of the devil and unjust people, and from all perils of soul and body. O Christ, guardian of all, let your right hand protect and shelter me by day and by night, while at home and while away, while sleeping and while awake, that I may never fall. My God, who opens your hand and fills all things living with your bounty, to you I commit my soul. Do care for me and provide for the needs of my body and soul forever. Have mercy upon your creatures and upon me, a great sinner. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Well, on those spiritual journeys up to heaven, I hope those bubbles at least take your mind to wander a little bit too. They do mine. I mean, they take me all kinds of places, especially these prayers. And the one I said it would be a little bit special because in this series of prayers, we've been doing four a week. Today, one of the verses, Christ, guardian of all, is probably the most recited prayer out of all of them. And it's very special because it is the prayer that many of the children of the genocide, people of the genocide, would pray. It was the prayer, "Christ, guardian of all, let your right hand shelter me by day and by night, while at home and while awake, while at sleep and while awake, so that I may never fall." I mean, here is a prayer that Nerses Shnor Ali wrote back in the 12th century, but has been recited even until today by people looking for that comfort of knowing that just as an umbrella would shelter us from all of the elements, the power of love, the right hand of Christ, that right hand of love has the power to be able to shelter us from all of the evil that is out there. And that is a very powerful prayer. It is a prayer that got people through genocide. It is a prayer that continues to get us through some of the most perilous times. And think about it for a moment. Are we talking about somebody actually superhuman strength coming in and fighting off evil? Or are we talking about that power being the power of love? Not a Superman, but a love that has to penetrate our hearts. And once you have that, then you are able to be sheltered against all of the evil in the world. This gets pretty profound, it gets pretty intense, pretty heavy, but that's where we're at today. We talked about genocide, we talked about a situation in Darfur, and I'm very happy to tell you that yesterday's rally ended in a very, very positive manner that none of us were expecting. Actually, we had just finished the speeches, which were all of it came out to about 8 minutes. And I invite you to our website, inissues.org. We have all of this documented. We have some video clips, pictures, and we definitely have the speeches up there too. But at the very end of the rally, there was KDJ, who had been living in those tents for the last 6 days, and she was nearly in tears, and she was reading on her BlackBerry. I gotta tell you, very, very high-tech operation. Don't look at it that it's just some tents on a sidewalk. There was generators. In fact, one night I even had a chance to take my laptop out there on the sidewalk, sit there and blog a piece that I hope you've read on our website. But anyway, we were able to tap into some of the Wi-Fi connections that were in the office buildings. And so there was KDJ with her little BlackBerry, and she was reading this press release that had just come over the wires that President Obama had appointed a major general to be an envoy to go to the Sudan. And I'm saying this because dreams do come true. Now, this isn't the big dream. There is no peace in Sudan, but it is one of the steps along the way. And sure enough, you know, we have to be able to celebrate some of those small steps, even in your lives. The little achievements sometimes may seem so minuscule, but you know what? They're one step closer. They're one drop in the bucket closer to filling it up, to filling up the dreams that are in front of us. And yesterday it was a fitting way to bring to the end a rally. Of course, Gabriel, our wonderful Gabriel, who is out there and continuing the march to Chad, actually, in the next couple days. He'll be going there with KDJ and the team from Stop Genocide Now. Gabriel reminded us, and I think it'd be a fitting way to end today's podcast by listening in to his message. It is one that we cannot stop right now.
Make this a commitment. We're doing more from right now on, okay? Don't go home and feel really good. I did what I had to do. No, we have to stay together, and we have to keep on going until the genocide stops in Darfur.
Oh, I love the honking of the horns and all the excitement. I miss it already. Well, I got to tell you, it was exciting. And as much as we talk about some of the difficulties going on in Darfur, being with the Darfuri group yesterday really, really kind of hits you really hard that how important life is, how important that connection to love is, because there was a lot of love in our hearts, and we were standing there as a team, united on a small little corner in the middle of Los Angeles, but realizing that we're on this planet together and we do need to reach out to one another, helping one another, and really spreading the love that comes from the bottom of our hearts. Well, this brings us to the end of this podcast. I can't impress upon you enough how important it is today for all of us to take our part in ending this genocide. On our website, we have addresses, we have text messaging places how you can get involved right now. Right now, you can email somebody, you can make a difference. Check out our website, inhisshoes.org, and of course, go to Gabriel's website, Stop Genocide Right Now, to follow all the things that they're doing, especially his most recent trip out to Chad and the refugee camps over there. Today's podcast was a little bit different. We do talk about spiritual issues, but I hope that you see in podcasts such as these that there are opportunities for us to really look at our place in the bigger picture, in the bigger scheme of life, and realizing that we are instrumental, we are important. Every small life contributes to the bigger collective. No man is an island, says the poet, and so it is. We never stand alone. We stand together, and we build this beautiful fabric, which we call the fabric of life. So, for all the wonderful people who made the last 4 days possible at In His Shoes Ministries, I want to take this opportunity to wish them all the best and ask for God's blessings upon them. For all the wonderful people at Stop Genocide Now, at Jewish World Watch, at Hope, at all of anybody today who stood up, the Catholic nuns that came there, anybody who took their time out to make a difference, God bless you and give you the strength. And I wish that same thing to all of our listeners, to everybody. I understand we've got a brand new group of listeners coming on board this week. I want to welcome you and tell you that each one of our podcasts is about different topics. And today we talked about Darfur. In the future, it'll be different things that will click with you in different ways. I don't want to say, and I hope that none of them will ever be irrelevant to you. Each one of them will click in a unique way. We have a lot of stuff coming up. Inhisshoes.org shows you all of the projects that we have. Most specifically, in the next month, we're collecting for a project that is very dear to us. It is called the 30-Hour Famine. Every year, we fast and we pray for 30 hours, and in so doing, we collect money for the children of genocide. Last year we helped Darfur. This year again in Darfur we'll be looking at some of the trouble hit areas. I'm pleased to say that In His Shoes, a small group of young people collectively, have raised over $500,000 for these projects, and I invite you to participate. I want to tell you that what we do is we get together at our youth ministry center in Glendale, and this year, because of The Next Step with Father Vasquez, and because of this podcast, we have an opportunity to unite people throughout the world via teleconferencing and communications through the internet. So I'm putting this out to you. If you would like to organize a famine, a forced famine in your area, and participate with us at In His Shoes, please let me know. In fact, drop me a personal email. You can do that at father@inhisshoes.org. Father@inhisshoes.org is a personal email that'll come to me and say, I want to set up a famine. I want to make a difference in my part of the world. And I'll tell you, if we can pull this off, we will have the ability to unite a large group of people on different continents. I mean, certainly we have listeners on every continent except Antarctica. I always have to remind myself that we're still waiting for that letter from Antarctica, but we do have listeners all over. And what do? We start creating a body that really does the work that Christ has commanded us to do. Love one another, help one another, and really embrace one another in this world. Hey, that's what it's all about, and that's why we're here. That's why we put these podcasts together. I want to thank you for joining us today. If you've got comments about this or any of the podcasts that we have, you can find them all on iTunes. You can find them at epostle.net. And certainly, we're looking for your feedback. You could send comments about this or anything that you might have in mind at feedback at epostle.net. Epostle, EPOSTLE.net. Yes, Epostle, they're the people who do apostolic evangelism in an electronic world. Get it? Apostle, Epostle. Oh, are these people clever or what? Well, we've come to the end of this podcast, and we look forward to having you back again next week. For all the wonderful people who put this together, for Susie, our producer, who relentlessly was out there on the front lines in beautiful Los Angeles Federal Building. For Ken, our engineer, who stayed in the background and did so much of the electronic legwork for us. And for Ani with her spiritual bubbles, and especially her, taking those bubbles out to the Federal Building. And for Haraj out in London, who never tires to give us that global perspective. This is Father Voskin inviting you again next week, when together we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.